Hi, this is the Welter Podcast. What is welter? It can be a verb meaning to move in turbulent fashion. In our case, it's University of Baltimore's premier literary journal, founded in 1965. We are imaginative collaborators in the Creative Writing and Publishing Arts MFA program. We're always looking for great writing and art. We'd love to publish your best work. Hit us up.
I'm Betsy Boyd. I'm the director of the Creative Writing and Publishing Arts MFA program at the University of Baltimore and the Welter Editor-in-Chief. The spring course, Publication and Performance, publishes the print version of Welter. Those students work as editors in the classroom. But the undergraduates in the class also learn to record their own writing. They learn the value of reading work aloud, which is so important to the literary journal experience. I'm here with Marta Rybczynski, a former student of mine in the Welter class. She recorded a terrific essay we're going to hear in a moment. Marta, can you explain what you learned recording this essay a couple of times over? You'd never recorded before, correct?
Right. I had never recorded one of my stories. And the process of going from the paper to going behind the mic was, it took a little while to catch on, but I think that's just how anything works, in that you just need to keep practicing. And in class, I had the opportunity to do that and feel that I walked away with this great result.
Well, you certainly did. And now let's hear.
Polish Camp and the Jukebox That Taught Me Everything. I've never been to Poland, but I've been to Polish Camp in Orchard Lake, Michigan, and they tell me it's pretty close. This was the place where I learned that kids from Chicago are misbehaved. It was the place where I learned that roommate disagreements can be solved with a snack. And it was the place where I learned that there are Polish people under the age of 60 years old. My parents found out about this camp through our small Polish community. We meet in a lodge in Fells Point located off Broadway. The building is extremely old. In fact, it was where my grandmother went to middle school, and they had to close it then for being too outdated and dysfunctional. The floors in every room curl upwards at the corners like water-damaged books, and it reeks of old men's hair gel and flaky cigars. It now functions as a dance studio, apartments for seniors, and a bar where old Polish men go to cry between wood-paneled walls. There was a jukebox in the bar that had 5 songs on it, but the old people only played one. It was a song called Hej Zakoi. I don't know what any of the words meant, but I knew what they meant to those old folks. No matter what they were doing, they got up and danced as much as their arthritic knees allowed. They loved it, and most of the organization's money came from the quarters piled high in that jukebox. When that song came on, suddenly the dusty curled floors became marble, and the wood-paneled walls melted like warm Easter butter into pictures you might see in a Party City catalog. The organization threw some money together for me and a few other local Polish kids to go to this camp run by Polish National Alliance, PNA. PNA was desperate for young blood. They needed some youthful enthusiasm. We were all tired of finding gray hairs in our gołąbki and dreamed for the day we might find a long blonde one. My cousin Rebecca would be joining me. She was my age, and we were psyched to go to sleepaway camp. We decided we were going to hold hands as the plane took off towards Orchard Lake, and I, at age 12, thought this was my last chance to meet my Polish husband. Very early that July morning, my cousin and I did as planned. We held hands during the plane's takeoff. She told me during this time that she used 75% of her suitcase space for Funyuns. She knew I'd overpack clothing, so she could just borrow some of mine in exchange for a snack. If I would have known what the cafeteria would be serving at the camp, I would have traded suitcases entirely. Before we ever stepped on that plane, I thought boneless wings were a suspicious concept, but I would have been happy to see some of that swimming in the bubbling sulfuric gunk they gave us. The entryway of the cafeteria smelled like microwave rice bags, which was fine. it sort of got the appetite going. And then by the time you made it to the industrially decorated buffet line, you could see your appetite leaving your body. Let's get one thing straight. Gravy is a topping, not a meal. I obviously wasn't prepared for this tragedy with my lack of snacks. In the Detroit airport, the adult in charge, Miss Emily, counted our terribly tie-dyed P&A shirts. We made them ourselves, and it looked like we were in some kind of juice factory accident or explosion. She counted all eight of us faux juice-stained kids. From there, we were told to search for a lady holding up a sign saying P&A. Our group found the lady and two boys standing near an entryway to one of the parking lots. I never did see the sign we were supposed to look for. Instead, I saw a tall, sexy 13-year-old boy with acne scars passing like he was over it, with strangely charming greasy brown hair. He wore a t-shirt from the Grand Canyon, and I wanted to walk next to him and ask him about his well-traveled self. Of course, I didn't, because I was still in my ugly juice shirt that made it seem like I hadn't been anywhere but a preschool classroom. We loaded our stuff into a van that P&A had arranged for us. This sort of planning came as a surprise to me because I was used to all other Polish organized events either being a huge disappointment or going completely haywire. We'd once held a game of bingo at our lodge on Eastern Avenue, but only one person donated a prize. It was a very competitive round of bingo. One of the old ladies won and stuck her purple tongue out after shouting, "Bingo!" She went home with an immersion blender, and honestly, I wouldn't have that prize go to anyone else because that lady had no teeth. While loading the suitcases, Emily couldn't help but applaud my cousin for packing so light. She blamed my suitcase for her aching back for the rest of the week. Polish people are famous for complaining. In the van, I didn't want to sit directly next to the boy with a Grand Canyon t-shirt and Bobby socks, whose name I learned was John, spelled J-A-N and pronounced for his whole life until this camp as Jan. Boys at my school wore ankle socks, but I figured I'd make this one exception. It took some time for even myself to make the switch to ankle socks, so I could sympathize. I felt too shy to get that close just yet, but I made it a point to sit next to his greasy head so I could get to know what he was about. The van ride was mostly silent besides the slight jingle of lanyards that the lady with the sign had handed out to us. John's little brother, who had off-the-walls ADHD, turned to my cousin, Rebecca, and asked where we were from as he rolled a checkered bouncy ball in his hands. He told us that they were from San Francisco, and we told him we needed proof because his skin was so pale. Nobody from Disney Channel was that pale. That's when John turned around. He said that actually, they wore loads of sunscreen because that's the misconception that tourists often make. As cloudy as San Francisco is, you always get sunburned. As a pale person myself, growing up in a school and community that was all olive-skinned Italians, I felt like I finally met someone who understood the broad spectrum troubles of pale skin. That was the sunscreen joke I'd made that made John turn back around in his seat. As we drove past some of the houses in Michigan, John noted that people built development houses because they loved sameness. He said people felt safe when everything looked the same. I thought he could honestly write the next Magic Treehouse book. He was a real Nietzsche of our time. When we finally got to the camp, I saw kids running everywhere. The adult-to-kid ratio was nothing like P&A had described to the worried Polish community. We checked in a low-ceilinged building with the same wood paneling. I could never seem to escape. An old man with a square head and red polo shirt held a megaphone. He shouted directions through it, but all he was really doing was showing us just how afraid he was to be outnumbered. The red polo man led every prayer through that megaphone. His right-hand woman was even scarier than the amount of children. Her head would shake like it was wobbling off her neck, and she had white hair that was cut so short and so thin that it might as well have not been there at all. Her eyes bugged out, and she told us that we couldn't get away with anything because she could see all of us at once. One eye went up and one eye went down, so it didn't matter if you were short or tall. You weren't getting away with whatever it was that you were secretly planning to do. Rebecca and I were told our room number in the dorm and made our way up the rubber-coated steps. Cement walls for a change. We made our beds and set up our fans immediately in the humid room. Becca lined her Funyuns up on the provided desk, and I worked on a sign that we could slip under the door of our Jack and Jill bathroom. It read, "Hey, 304, you're going to have to pee somewhere else." Just locking the door would have sufficed. We liked having the window open in our room because our fans just didn't cut it. The rules changed 2 days in when the red polo man found out some boys were sneaking into the girls' rooms. "We'll say an extra prayer for those lost souls this morning," he said through the megaphone. And for the rest of the week, it was extremely difficult to fall asleep. Some of the kids would just bring pillows to our daily heritage classes to catch up on sleep then. It seemed that nobody was there to learn how to weave palm into crosses or learn about the tragedies in Warsaw anyway. I soon found out that everyone was there for the dance at the end of the week. I thought this could be my chance to talk to John, and maybe I could introduce him to ankle socks and falling in love. Before the dance, we had dinner at the cafeteria. I told Rebecca that I'd have to take some Lucky Charms back from the cereal station because we were running low on Funyuns. She barely talked to me for the rest of the nauseating meal. But when she did, she sounded like a mother who was 1 week behind on her bills. "I didn't want you to eat that many Funyuns, Marta. I thought that was so rude of her to say while wearing my clothes." We huffed off, and now I didn't have anyone to go to the dance with. The girls in the room next to us certainly wouldn't go with me after that insensitive sign I'd been putting under the bathroom door all week, and John still didn't even know my name. I still went all out for the dance, wearing my one and only Limited 2 shirt. It was a brown top with a gold guitar and gold music notes on it that I personally felt screamed, "Hey John, let's talk about music." In the gymnasium where the dance was being held, I saw my cousin wearing her Juice tie-dye shirt. She was in an arts and crafts group weaving more palm crosses for a display to the PNA president. Polish techno music blasted. I know she hated weaving the palm, but she didn't want to be seen on the dance floor in that shirt. I saw John over by the drinks, getting himself and his little brother a Coke. John's brother bounced his checkered bouncy ball too far and ran to get it before the man in the red polo did. I knew this was my chance to ask if he wanted to dance with me. I approached him, sweating through my teen spirit deodorant, and asked, "John, right?" He held up his lanyard and said, "There's a reason why we wear these lanyards." I, along with most of the other kids, had taken ours off. I laughed and began to pour myself a Coke. I knew I just had to bite the bullet and ask. The song changed from one Polish techno song to the next. I asked him, "Do you maybe want to dance?" He told me he had to find his brother, and I was just devastated. He wasn't like the rest of the boys. He didn't sneak out once or bring his pillow to class. I saw Rebecca again. She looked just as miserable as I did. Seeing her in that shirt was downright pathetic. I knew I had to get her more chips. Besides, we were going to have an awfully long day of traveling the next day, especially in the van ride to the airport, sitting with John. There was a small store nearby that I'd seen when we were driving in. We weren't allowed off campus without an adult, and I certainly wasn't going to try to explain my situation to them, because that's just asking for another long story about how hard their lives were in Warsaw. It was sort of impressive that I found them to be so predictable. I knew exactly how these people worked because there were so many of them back in Baltimore. That's when I knew exactly what to do. I ran over to the DJ and put in my request for a song. I went back to the drink table and waited, hoping, wishing I had my own megaphone to pray through so this would work. The song came on. Hey, Zakoe. All the adults went running to the dance floor with faces like they were hypnotized by the music. That's when I made my move out of the gymnasium. I snuck across the campus and down the road a ways to the small convenience store. I bought 6 bags of Funyuns and a rosary. I managed to run back, sweating and convinced that I'd run about 10 miles, when in reality it was probably 1 mile in total, considering both ways. When I got back to the gymnasium, I hid the Funyuns in a bush outside. I buried them under some dirt because the neon bag didn't exactly make things easy for me. At the door, I had a run-in with Crooked Eyes Lady. She was yelling at me and unintentionally the kid next to me as well. "Where have you been?" she screamed. I pulled the plastic rosary from my pocket. "The display," I shouted back. I wanted to add my rosary to the display of palm crosses. She still looked very angry, and what I was saying didn't really even make sense to me either. "A rosary?" said the man, who that day was wearing a yellow polo. He said it through his megaphone. He thought that was very sweet of me, but still scolded me for leaving without telling an adult. I swung my rosary around as I ran to the palm folding table. I told Rebecca I had more Funyuns. She looked apologetic and asked how I got them. I told her I'd explain on our long trip home, where I would be sitting very far away from John and as close as I could to Rebecca and the bag of Funyuns.
Thank you for listening. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook for up-to-date submission calls. Come thrash with us.